Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the sound of universal compassion. Please enjoy.
Hello and welcome to the program today. I hope you've had a great week and your practice has gone well. Following on from our last program, we're continuing discussing mind training like the rays of the sun, Namkha Pel's commentary on another Buddhist text titled Seven Points of Mind Training. This text, and obviously the commentary, are focused mainly on developing bodhicitta, the mind that wishes to attain enlightenment to best benefit all living beings. That mind is primarily based on great love and great compassion, so we have to develop those two first. Great love is the love that appreciates all beings everywhere. Usually our love is biased. It operates at different levels for people at different times. We can hardly say it's a stable thing. If it were, imagine how little trouble we would have with our relationships. Yet because it's not, we end up often enough hating the person we started out loving, as if they were the only being on the planet. Now imagine having that love not for just one or two beings. Imagine that it arose every time when you just looked at someone else, even a stranger, or more difficult, someone you don't like, maybe your enemy. And this is the point that we've arrived at in the text. That is, developing great love for all beings. And Namkha Pel starts with those not on the spiritual path. Under this heading, we've spoken about love for those in the hells, the hungry ghosts, the animals, and the long-life gods. And as our last program ended, we were discussing love for the enemy. In particular, we were talking about Namkha Pel's quote, "Having imagined creating various external necessities, such as food, clothing, and shelter from our bodies, we invoke all harmful elements with the hook of the awakening mind, then sincerely giving them whatever they require, generate a deep sense of closeness to them, thinking, 'You have been my own mother on countless occasions over beginningless time. You have tried your utmost to help me in every possible way, saving me from misery and disaster.' Remember that, in addition, we owe them an immense debt, having eaten their flesh, gnawed their bones, drunk their blood, and worn their skin. We have robbed them of their possessions, tortured them physically, and taken their lives. We should recognize that we now have a responsibility to repay this debt of kindness." Now, even considering this quote, it probably seems very hard to have love for those who have harmed us, and we started discussing how to do this last time, just before our time ran out. So we'll continue talking about how to develop love even for those we dislike in a moment. But right now, let's set our motivation for participating in the program as we usually do. Remember that a bodhicitta motivation is the best. I am participating to attain enlightenment so that I can best help all living beings and especially to lead them to enlightenment. Our object, all living beings, is unlimited. So too then, the positive potential we accumulate with such a motivation is great. But if this is going too far for you, then consider as your motivation your own liberation. So now, let's think about our motivation. Thank you. Namkha Pel recommends thinking of all others as our mothers from previous lives. You may remember that this is the technique used in the seven cause and effect method of generating bodhicitta. Normally, our mother is central to our lives. She's the one who brought us into life and looked after us as though we were the most important being in the world. I remember a time when I was a kid and my father, after a nasty car accident, was between jobs. We didn't have much money. We couldn't afford to buy enough food for the five people in the family. So my mother went without so that her three kids and husband had enough. And that's what our mother is like, isn't it? If the kids are sick, she cares for them day and night while praying that she can have the sickness and her child is relieved. We depend so much on our mother that if anything goes wrong, even when we're adults, she is the first one we turn to for comfort and protection. And that's the mother in this life, but we've had countless lives, and each of our mothers in those lives has been equally kind. Because the mother is not always the same in each life, we can say that not one being exists that has not been our mother in a previous life. So all beings have been as kind to us at some time as our mother of this life. And this is the argument Namkapal makes when urging us to admit, you have been my own mother on countless occasions over beginningless time. You have tried your utmost to help me in every possible way, saving me from misery and disaster. And then, in countless lives in which we've been meat eaters, maybe as people or maybe as animals, we've been eating the flesh of those beings, gnawing at their bones, and even using their skin as our clothing. We've been robbers or rampaging soldiers and taken their possessions for our own and abused them in various ways. We've caused them endless suffering and even killed them. These beings who at other times have been our infinitely kind mother. Namkapal suggests that due to the way that we've used all other beings in these various ways, we now owe them a huge debt. In this life, they may have brought us some harm, but in comparison to the benefit we've gained from them over time, that harm is negligible. Convincing ourselves of this helps to mitigate the resentment we may feel at the harm we may have suffered at their hands in this life. Keeping their enormous kindness in mind, it then becomes easier to transform our body into everything that these currently harmful beings require and to bring them happiness. Another good way to free ourselves up to develop love and generosity for our enemy is to get rid of the instinctual categorizing of other beings into friend, enemy, or stranger. Now, it's quite natural to do this, and no doubt it served us well in the past when we had to fight for our life, family, tribe, and territory. But now, when communication and travel are so pervasive, and it's become increasingly difficult to stick within one tribe, we'd better give up that way of reacting and instead develop a warm-heartedness for all others. We are all residents of the global village, and we need to get on with each other if we want to survive and prosper. So how do we free ourselves from the friend-enemy-stranger syndrome? Let's consider these three categories in some depth. First, bring to mind a close friend and how you feel for this person. Have you always felt this way about them? Wasn't this person a stranger to you at some stage, and you didn't feel anything like the love you have for them now? Will your love last, and can you say for sure that this person will be your friend in a year or two? You can't, can you? By then, this person may have said or done something really to make you mad, so mad that you don't want to have anything to do with them again. Or they may have moved to another country and lost touch with you. Any number of situations, physical and emotional, could separate you and this person, couldn't they? And they will. Think about the friends you had when you were much younger. How many of them are still your friends? I bet at most one or two, but probably none. Similarly, bar one or two, your current friends will almost definitely not be friends anymore in a year or more in the future. So why cling to them, sometimes as hard as though they are the reason for your very life? Friendship is temporary and ephemeral, and we will never know when it will end. And this friend who is so close now is always on the verge of becoming an enemy or a stranger. But the same is true of enemies. Bring someone to mind who is difficult to get on with. Not necessarily to the point of you wanting to kill them, but even if when you think of them, your mind recoils even a little. Did this person who is so distasteful now always appear so? Will this person definitely be so distasteful in 2 or 3 years' time? In fact, as friends can become enemies, so enemies can, with a few kindnesses to us, become good friends. And so we cannot say that the person who is hateful today will be so even in a month or two's time. Remember again all the enemies you had when you were much younger and see how many of them still plague you. Not many, I bet. Probably none of them. They too will have gone their own ways or have become friends of some sort. And we can apply the same scrutiny to strangers. Friends and enemies are strangers before we get to know them, and they inevitably return to being strangers in time. So we can see that there's no real reason to hold on to the definition of friend, enemy, and stranger so strongly. These are volatile categories with porous walls, and wouldn't it be much better if we could dispense with them? Think what it would be like to not slot others into the three categories, but regard every being with open, warm-heartedness. Then we would not need to cling to some, fight with and be repulsed by others, and act dull-mindedly and ignorant with all the rest. If we have no enemies and not attached to those we call friends, wouldn't life be more simple and easy? What a great protection it would be to see all others with equal kindness and warm-heartedness, no matter how they act to us. Can you see that it would be very difficult for them to harm us, no matter what they did or said? They could be angry and bitter towards us, but because our mind is focused on loving kindness, it would have a kind of armor against their harm. In Tibetan Buddhist tradition, this friend-enemy-stranger meditation is considered a forerunner of meditations on loving kindness. It's like having a field full of rocks and weeds, which you want to cultivate for crops. Your first job is making the field smooth and free of everything that will prevent plentiful crops growing. Friend, enemy, stranger are like the rocks, weeds, and so on. Once we are free of these categories, developing loving kindness for all beings becomes much easier. In an article on her website, SusanPiver.com, Susan Piver, the New York Times best-selling author, teacher, speaker, and mindfulness expert, actually uses the traditional meditation on loving kindness to help in overcoming heartbreak. Now, I'm repeating the article here because I think it's not only a good way to deal with someone who has broken your heart, but it can be adapted for anybody we find annoying. This is what she writes. When your heart is broken, or you're otherwise dealing with strong, painful emotions, the idea of feeling genuine loving kindness for anyone can seem far-fetched, much less for yourself or the one who broke your heart. Loving kindness is soft and gentle, but your heart feels cold and numb, or inflamed with rage, not loving at all. You may feel so unlovable and needy and freaked out that if you could shut your heart down and turn off all emotion altogether, it would be a blessing. Love is the enemy. Love stinks. So if I tell you that you still possess the most profound, elegant, indestructible well of love imaginable, you might not believe me. If I tell you that the solution for your heartaches is not to seal up your heart, but to open it further, that might sound dangerous. And if I further told you that your capacity for love has never been greater, and the cure for your broken heart is to offer that love to your ex, you would definitely tell me I'm crazy. It's possible. But hear me out. I want to offer you the practice of loving kindness as the healing balm you need. You could try it yourself and see. The Buddhist practice of loving kindness, metta in Pali and Maitri in Sanskrit, has been in use for over 2,500 years. The story is that some monks were sent by the Buddha to meditate in a particular forest. As soon as they got their meditation gear, well, I guess you'd call it that, settled, certain tree spirits began to harass them by making scary noises, emitting an awful stench, and generally causing commotion. I sort of picture it like trying to meditate while 50 10-year-olds bang pots and pans while farting. One can only imagine. The monks returned to the Buddha and said, "It's not going to work. Would you please reassign us?" The Buddha said, "Why don't you go back and try this practice instead?" And he gave them the practice of loving kindness that I'm about to teach you. This practice is a way of creating harmony in a difficult relationship by opening your heart to it, relating to the suffering of all involved, and wishing everyone, including yourself, well. So although unsure, the monks did this practice, and the tree spirits were pacified on the spot. Rather than trying to drive the monks out, they encircled and protected them. Having a broken heart can feel as cacophonous and untenable as the poor monks' forest scene. But here, too, loving kindness can be applied as the royal antidote to your own suffering. I'm going to offer you two ways to do the practice, One is the traditional instruction, and the second is that instruction tweaked a bit for use by the heartbroken. First, here is the traditional instruction. The practice of loving kindness begins with yourself. This is a very important step. Don't gloss over it. If you can't find a way to feel tenderness towards yourself, the rest of the practice won't work. I bet that 2,500 years ago, the idea of feeling kindly towards yourself wasn't such a big deal. However, in our day, this might be the most difficult part of the practice. We are so incredibly hard on ourselves. Most of us offer kindness towards ourselves begrudgingly, and then only after we've accomplished some superhuman task and feel we deserve it. But you can soften to yourself much more than this. In fact, extending the hand of friendship to yourself is crucial, not just for your healing process, but for the rest of your life. Loving kindness teaches you how. To begin the practice, sit or lie down somewhere comfortable. Close your eyes. Take a few minutes to settle down by focusing on your breath until you feel that you're actually there. Then bring to mind a sense of how hard you've worked in your life to find happiness. You really, really have. You even gave your heart away in the name of this effort. In this and other circumstances, you've done your best, and sometimes this has resulted in happiness, sometimes in sorrow. Either way, your intention was to find happiness, joy, and contentment. You know this is true, deep down in your heart. Even though it may be uncomfortable, let your heartbreak wash over you. Feel as fully as you can what it feels like when you try really hard and then suffer a loss like this. You wouldn't wish it on anyone, even yourself. With this in mind, send yourself the following wishes. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be peaceful. May I live with ease. These phrases are traditional, but you can alter them slightly to make them more natural for you if you like. Spend a while wishing these things for yourself as ardently as you can. See what it feels like to like yourself. Next, bring to mind a loved one. Someone who, when you just think of them even for a second, causes your heart to soften. It could be a relative, friend, child, or pet. Take in what you know of their efforts to find happiness and how they've had gains and losses. Recall your own feelings of sadness, rage, loneliness, and numbness, and know that this loved one has felt these exact same things. You would do anything to take some of their burden on, and you can through this practice. Feeling their pain, send them the phrases for a while. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be peaceful. May you live with ease. The next step is to think of someone called the stranger. This is someone you know, but don't have any feelings about. Maybe a person you pass on the street all the time, or the waitress who brought you lunch. You can assume beyond doubt that they are just like you and your loved one, trying hard, meeting with successes, meeting with failures. They have felt exactly what you and your loved one have, exactly. And this is true for all beings, period. Without even knowing them, you can offer your loving kindness. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be peaceful. May you live with ease. Now next comes the really interesting part. The instruction is to choose someone called the enemy. This is someone who has harmed you, someone you don't like, someone who you believe has done wrong with a capital W. You don't have to like them at all to know that, even though it may look insane to you, they too are actually trying to find happiness. Think that, regardless of how they got there, whether or not they deserve it, this enemy has felt the sharp, seemingly unendurable pain of loss. Whether they have allowed themselves to feel it as you would doesn't matter. In their own way, they have felt what you have exactly. Without excusing their behavior, you can still wish for them the following. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be peaceful. May you live with ease. Just a note here. In the Tibetan tradition, the so-called enemy is not necessarily someone who has done you wrong with a capital W. It is someone who, when you think of them, makes some kind of negative impact in your mind, even a relatively small one. Bearing that in mind, Susan Piver continues, "End the practice by sending your loving kindness to all beings. Open your heart to the knowledge that at one time or another, or even right now, all beings have experienced sorrow, loss, egregious injustice, and so on. You can do it. Your heart is definitely that big. Holding this understanding of the shared community of beings who have been so incredibly sad, wish the following. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings live with ease. Then, when you're ready, let the entire practice go and sit quietly for a few minutes. Now for a variation on the practice. I'm going to make the radical suggestion that you do this practice for the one who broke your heart. In no way do you have to forgive this person, like them, or let them off the hook for anything. I suggest you begin the practice exactly as you did in the more general version, with yourself, but thereafter place your ex in every single role, as your loved one, because you did or do love him or her, as a stranger, because goodness knows this person has his or her unknowable aspects, and as an enemy, as someone who has really hurt you. When I teach this practice in workshops, I suggest changing the phrases up slightly to something like this. May I, you be happy. May I, you be healthy in body and mind. May I, you be peaceful. May I, you know love. As with the traditional practice, begin by connecting with your own deepest longing for love and the devastating pain of heartbreak. Feel what it feels like to have a broken heart and how much you would like to heal. Having a loss such as this results in an altered state of being, one that can feel like alternately like a nightmare, the end of your life, frozen numbness, or grasping, pleading neediness. You would never wish this for yourself. You would wish yourself the opposite, and that is exactly what this practice is about. Send loving kindness towards yourself. May I be happy. May I be healthy in body and mind. May I be peaceful. May I know love. Then move on to your ex and his or her manifestations as a loved one, stranger, and enemy. Wish him or her loving kindness as your loved one, who has also had his or her heart broken in some way, whether in the present or the past. May you be happy. May you be healthy in body and mind. May you be peaceful. May you know love. Wish him or her loving kindness as someone who is a stranger to you, utterly unknowable, a stranger with a broken heart, and repeat the phrases from above. Next, wish him or her loving kindness as your enemy, one who has turned against you, and whose actions, whether directly or indirectly, are the result of a broken heart and or the longing for love. You can be certain this is true. From this certainty, repeat the phrases from above. Finish by wishing these things for all beings who have suffered, are suffering, or will suffer from heartbreak. Doing this practice may be quite difficult, or it may not. If it raises feelings of grief, rage, confusion, impatience, hang in there. Don't try to push these feelings away. Let them in. Try to feel them without, and this is the most important thing ever, judging yourself or the meaning of your feelings. Just feel. If you cry or fume, it's okay. When you can, acknowledge to yourself that whatever awful thing you might be feeling is also being felt by others according to their own version, perhaps even the one who broke your heart. As you cycle through the stations of this practice, self, loved one, stranger, enemy, all beings, know deep in your heart that what you feel is also felt by each of these beings, no more, no less. They have suffered what you suffer, definitely. Wishing them loving kindness and wishing it for yourself becomes entwined. And that is Susan Piver on susanpiver.com. I like the way that she emphasizes that it's not only oneself that suffers uncomfortable feelings. We can be sure that almost all of us have been let down in one way or another by those we hold dear. Almost all of us are caught up with people difficult to deal with, and almost all of us feel some reserve with strangers. It's only those of us who confront these uncomfortable feelings and make a conscious effort to regard everyone in the same warm-hearted light that slowly overcome them. Certainly, putting our tendency to slot beings into friend, enemy, stranger will not disappear overnight and might take a long time to soften. But with perseverance, we can definitely do it. Returning now to Nam Kau Pel, once we've changed our resentful attitude to those who have harmed us and decided to return kindness to their harm, we give them everything they may need. Nam Kau Pel says, since this is their right, imagine they're obtaining what they each wish in their respective forms. Food for the hungry, clothes for the needy, shelter for the homeless, friends and servants for those who yearn for them. Of the foods, supply the three dairy products, the three sweets, and flesh and blood for those who want them. Give liberally, without restraint. Let those who want flesh eat it. Let those who want blood drink it. Let those who want bones gnaw them. Let those who want skins wear them. Whether they want raw food immediately or cooked food eventually, let them have it. The moment we give it to them, they eat, their bellies fill, and being relieved of hunger, thirst, and poverty, they gain mental satisfaction. Their malicious thoughts and evil deeds are pacified. The altruistic intent of the awakening mind is born in their mind streams, and the two collections are perfected. Imagine that thereby their mind streams are imbued with the bliss of the perfect body of truth. So, converting our body into every possible thing that these beings need, from basic necessities to the body of a Buddha, we give it to them and they experience great satisfaction and bliss. Nam Kau Pel goes on, there is a verse that says, the result of help is happiness and the fruit of harm is misery. See your condition as an example and do not inflict harm on others. And with that, we must say farewell as our time is up. Thanks for joining the program today, and please do tune in again next week. Let's dedicate all positive potential from the program to gaining enlightenment to be of greatest benefit to all beings everywhere. Thank you, and goodbye.